thank you for joining in once again and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I'm chef and host Jonathan Fraser.
And I'm your co-host Aaron Howlett. Join us again as we go on another culinary adventure of the Comox Valley and beyond.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to another episode of the Edible Valley Podcast. I know they've been a little bit sparse between episodes lately.
A little bit.
That's usually what happens when both of us get going and we have tons and tons of projects on the go. And so this time we thought we'd bring in an expert.
So we've got Marita Prado with us.
Your problems with her name.
I know. Well, as it turns out, Mo and I have known each other for years.
For like 20
but
years.
I've only ever known her as Mo. So I'm thrown off by the fact that she has more to her name.
Old identity.
Marita's here. Prado's here. She's going to talk to us about Lush Valley. And maybe you want to give us a bit of your backstory because you've given us a little rundown of your work history, your involvement. And it's a lot of things jump out here that I've never really encountered.
Sure. So a little bit about me and my background in food security and food systems work. I'll kind of give you the recent 6 years, I guess. So I've recently moved in the last 2 years up to the Comox Valley from Victoria, where I worked for an organization called Life Cycles Project Society in Victoria. And I was the executive director there for almost 3 years. And so that organization is actually quite similar to Lush Valley in the focus on community food security and local food systems, local food economy, and food literacy. Lush Valley, coming up to Lush Valley, it was interesting to be able to say, hey, there's this organization that does similar work. It's a little bit, it's been a nice transition for me because I found working in Victoria, just because of where kind of things are economically, it was hard to keep that organization running and funded, and I wanted something that was a little bit less stressful.
Right.
So, yeah. I'm excited about that.
Guess you had more people to deal with.
More people to keep employed and,
expenses.
More expenses. And then the other piece of the work that I've been doing is I've been teaching at a college called Pacific Rim College for the last 6 years. So I taught a course, that was called Food Economy and Society. There's a truncated version of that that's sort of politics of food. So it kind of looks at this brief, how did the global food system come to be the way that we see it today? Mm-hmm. And then what could be localized responses to that in terms of how can we create community solutions that address some of the, you know, ills of the, if I can put it bluntly, of the global food economy. So there's that piece. And then I'm also teaching in a permaculture design program coming up. Just doing more program management stuff. So how do people run food systems and food security or permaculture programs?
See, this is the stuff that just kind of like blows my mind and gets me excited about food. Like, I love food systems. Like, it's my little geekiness coming out there. I'm like, how does food get from point A to point B and just all the systems? And people think that it's a farmer goes out there, pulls a carrot out of the ground, walks to the supermarket, hands it to the supermarket. Who maybe washes it, and then you come in and take it home, right? But
there's so much. It's just such a complex system.
Yeah. I love getting into like history of I love looking at like London, England, and how the whole city was developed around how they could get meat from the outside of the town to the center of the town. Like, and it's just like it's just mind blowing. Like, it's just amazing, right? But
I'm going off on a tangent. It's like something as bland as tea, like, changed the world. You think about it as being the drink of London, England, but they couldn't grow tea themselves. Mm-hmm. So it was that drink of the Industrial Revolution and colonization where they had to enslave people for the sugar and to grow the tea and all these things. And it changed the world. Like, drink, you know, changed the world.
That's crazy.
So it's just, it's very interesting. Food systems are just so interesting, and there's
Well, maybe we'll circle back around at the end and you can tell people where they can learn more about that, because it is a very interesting topic. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about too, one, the permaculture. I mean, this show has kind of roots in permaculture in that the original co-host left the show to study permaculture. It's sort of one of those topics that seems to keep coming back around, even though it's on the, I wouldn't say on the QT, most people aren't aware of it, but yet it seems to be a growing movement that's happening all around, which is great. And, you know, maybe we can talk about permaculture in a future episode or something of that nature.
Yeah, I think it's so empowering because there's a recognition that you can actually design food systems to be regenerative, which people don't often think about food systems as something that we design.
Yeah, so I love the idea that you can produce so much food in a small piece of property utilizing nature in its own form, that it's, I mean, it's just sort of utilizing rain cycles, better utilizing natural drainage. I it's fantastic. We should probably talk about it again at
another
some point.
Time.
Yeah,
obviously you're coming back. But we should get
let's get back on task. I can keep going on this
a little bit about Lush Valley, because it endorses all these ideas, right?
It does. Yeah.
And so maybe we can just talk a little bit about the organization.
Sure, I'd love to do that. So Lush Valley has actually been around since the year 2000. Which not everybody kind of knows. But the work or the vision, like what we envision, is having healthy local food at the heart of community well-being. So it's a food security organization. When you talk about food security, people can sometimes get lost. What does that actually mean? So community food security is about healthy access to food for all people at all times. But Lush Valley's definition really embeds a bit more to it. So we see a healthy local food economy as being, you know, intrinsically, you know, it has to be embedded in that definition. And the idea of food literacy, which is really just people having the skills to grow food or cook food or even celebrate food, you know, that's also embedded in that definition for us. So we're kind of trying to work on all of those different fronts at the same time. So our work is to build skills and knowledge so that people have the ability to access, grow, preserve, cook, and celebrate healthy and where possible local food. That's what we're doing.
Yeah. It seems like really well defined and summed up, but it incorporates so much. Like I wouldn't say it's a far reach, but there's a lot you're trying to accomplish there.
Yeah. We're kind of a tiny organization with a big vision.
Yeah. That's great.
How many members do you have in Lush Valley?
Members. Okay, let's see. So membership right now is defined fairly loosely. So it includes people that volunteer 3 hours of their time or give a donation of $20 or more to the organization. So I don't have a number because we calculate it each year. I don't have a number off the top of my head, but it's somewhere around 150 or so, 200. Because when, we look at our active volunteers in our fruit tree project alone, that's over 100 people.
Well, I know I find it's like, it's amazing, like how many people I run into and I meet, and then like through the food system, right? Like as chefs or farmers, and then start talking to them and they're like, oh, you work with Lush Valley quite a bit. I'm like, oh, so do I. I'm like, how come we've never met? Because I think you guys have so many things on the go. I was thinking we should talk a little bit about the programs. That was actually my next question.
So, yeah, same here.
Because you guys have all these programs. We should mention some.
So I was just talking briefly there about our fruit tree program,
right?
Which has been running for I think this was our 17th season. So it's kind of our flagship program, and most people kind of know Lush. They know the Fruit Tree Project.
Right.
So what we do is we organize teams of volunteers to go out to properties of people that have fruit trees that they're not able to pick for whatever reason. We pick the fruit, we bring it back, and we distribute that. So we have, you know, 10 to 15 community partners, usually like social service partners, and we distribute that fruit to them. Anything that's left over that can't be distributed kind of goes back to generating revenues for the program. So we bring that to Blue Moon, and that gets pressed to cider, or we sell juice.
Yes.
So we're Well, that's good. Yeah. You know, there's just so much benefit to the program. The last season, we harvested 45,000 pounds of fruit.
Amazing.
So it's all really, there's one coordinator who's amazing. We all know and love.
Yes, we've all met and listened to him. You can check out some of his previous episodes.
So, yeah, he's just like, I'm like, you're never allowed to leave. You're so perfect for this job. But yeah, so one coordinator, we had a summer student help, but we have a lot. It's all volunteer, mm-hmm.
right? And you guys have done some fruit picking too, right? Like the
veggie?
Yeah,
veggies. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. It expanded beyond just the fruit trees.
Yeah, so this last year, it's super exciting. So we piloted a new farm gleaning program. Mm-hmm. It's slightly different from, and you wouldn't know it unless you're kind of in the organization, but it's nuanced from the Fruit Tree Project in that we are actually trading volunteer labor on farms in exchange for unmarketable produce. So instead of just going and being like, we're going to pick your tomatoes and take those away, it's seems to be a much better model to be this sort of farm-centric, like, what do you need as a farmer? How can we provide that labor on your farm? And then we might be weeding your asparagus, but you end up giving us all the peppers that you can't use. Is made a really big difference in terms of farmers being like, this was really actually quite helpful for us at the time that we needed labor. Yeah, and volunteers are learning all these skills.
And getting something to feed their belly, which is
totally
probably a bonus right on there. And some exercise, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I get a chance to talk about the project at the Community Foundation Awards next week because we developed a new partnership with BC Housing, with Washington Inn, through that project. Oh, yeah. And they have 140 tenants.
Yeah.
And so Bev Miller, who's the tenant support worker there, just like was gushing. Like I almost cried. I went one day just from farm to the Washington Inn and watched people just, you know, these people, like she just talks about it changing the entire culture of the space, which, yeah, anyways, it was really a success.
It's funny, you fill someone's belly and a lot of those stresses go away, you know, get them good food and they feel good.
Yeah.
You know, like, so.
Absolutely. And then, I'm trying to find the right word, but you can infect a neighborhood. That sounds awful. But you know what I mean? You take a core audience that's generally in a not so advantageous position, and you give them a bit of care and hope and what have you, and you can sort of change the whole mood that surrounds, you know, that like a general area.
And we keep seeing these things happen where now we have a deeper relationship with BC Housing, and so they've actually contracted us. They're going to have a garden in the space. They're going to have community kitchen workshops. So it's just, it's all about relationships, you know, for us as a small organization. It's all about, we can't do anything in isolation. It's all about collaborating. And so, yeah, so we were really happy with that pilot.
Well, I was just thinking, you're bringing up the community and a garden, and you guys run a community garden as well, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
I think that's really special. I find, like, just having those, I know a lot of cities are trying to build community gardens because I think they're such an important place for not only, like, growing food, but meeting people and communicating and, you know, just keeping, you know, there's more to it than just this garden sitting there in some vacant lot or something. Like, there's a whole community that revolves around it. It's really exciting.
Yeah. So I'll talk just very briefly. Yeah. So Share the Harvest Community Garden, it's located at 6th and Harmstead. Mm-hmm. It's about a third of an acre. And we have, a coordinator that, you know, I just love my staff, and so her name's Emma Hutchinson, and she, you know, the key, like, I've seen lots of community gardens work well, I've seen lots fail, and the key really hinges on having the consistency of a coordinator that has such a depth of knowledge in growing food, but such a depth of knowledge in building community and, you know, building relationships, and so she has both in spades or whatever, it's been a really great season, and she's going to continue on, and we've built some new partnerships as well there, so that's been good.
I think that's a big thing of it, because a lot of people like to go in and do a little gardening, but it's like, it's a lot of work. Keep a garden, keep a farm going, and I think it's that, and it's not that it's like it's all at once work, but it's like every day you have to be there, you have to tend the soil, you have to make sure everything's going right. This is why my gardens fail every year, because I'm really ambitious in getting the seeds in there and planting and watering them the first time, and then I expect them to grow by the end of it. Kind of doesn't work that way.
I planted 7 big hardy beds And I got so much time out of that. I literally kept having to go away and go away and go away. And I managed to yield maybe half of the stuff that I intended on yielding out of my garden this past year.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, right? It's like these are living systems. They need constant care and attention. And so it is an interesting from sort of an executive director where I'm looking for funding all the time. It's always an interesting one trying to keep that guard because you can't miss a season.
Right.
You know, you have to make sure it's consistent.
Keep it going.
And that is the city of Courtney's community garden. I mean, it's in the heart of the city. And so we really have... I think we will be working even more closely kind of with the city in the coming years. And the council now like is so very supportive. Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really amazing to see.
Speaking of support, I mean, to the person or people that may be listening here that's interested or moved by what maybe is going on or what you're trying to achieve or what Lush Valley is trying to achieve, how do people get involved or where do you need help? Like where, I think that's more accurate. Maybe as you were saying, like refined the way that you approach the farms so that it became much more beneficial to each party. I think that the majority of the people in the Valley have heard of Lush Valley before, but maybe don't know what's required of them or what they can be doing to advance the efforts of Lush Valley.
Mm-hmm. Sure, there's lots of ways to get involved. I mean, one of the nice things is we now have a website. It's almost not quite a year old, but that's allowed us to kind of streamline, like you can sign up as a volunteer on the website.
Oh, yeah.
So that's allowed us to kind of streamline that. You can actually sign up your tree if you want your tree picked on the website. Which is really helpful for us just in terms of capacity. It just takes a bit of, you know, having to answer the phone and fill in forms and that kind of thing off of the very small staff that
right.
we have. But, you know, I have to say it shamelessly, like, you know, donating to the work that we do is one of the best ways that you can support the work. Because I'll be honest, when you look at food systems and you look at the work that we're trying to do, there's a lot of money that goes into, let's say, you know, care for chronic disease, right? Emergencies, like emergency food provision and that kind of thing. But we're really looking at this sort of interesting preventative approach. Like we want to see healthy people accessing healthy food from a young age so that that lasts a lifetime and there's, you know, this lifetime of wellness. Well, unfortunately, in our society, the way it's set up, that's not always what gets funded.
No.
You know, the people that are dealing with the emergencies, and it's understandable, those are the people that are, you know, those are the organizations or the hospitals that are dealing with, you know, chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to
directly affecting people at the moment. Instead
yeah, exactly.
Of things that are coming down the line.
Yeah. Always, you know, we're always looking for funding to do our work and feel that the return on investment is so huge because we're talking about creating something, you know, healthy habits that will last a lifetime. That's
right.
kind of the goal.
Well, this
and
is a great segment into
yeah.
some of the cooking classes you
yeah.
do, which is kind of my part, how I
totally.
Got roped into doing this. And I said, it's one of the toughest jobs I've ever done in my life.
Teaching kids,
but yet the most rewarding job I have ever done in my life.
That's awesome.
So it's those moments you're just like, just keeping that energy alive and keeping your eye on the safety aspect of having
right.
10, 11 kids with sharp knives and hot frying pans
yeah.
and trying to teach them how to get into food and really appreciate it and making them try things, which is always like is probably the hardest thing, I think, as a parent to sometimes force
oh, yes.
your child to eat your broccoli. Or,
oh, my
yeah.
gosh. And I struggle with that daily, just so
yeah.
everybody knows. Like, it's
yeah.
the struggle is real with trying to get kids to eat their vegetables, and I struggle with my son, too. So
yeah, and I find it's neat when you're in that surrounding of having a bunch of kids that they actually feed off of each other. So then it's like I was doing sushi and getting them to eat, like, you know, different fish and stuff. And at first, I like, you know, even the nori paper. Like seaweed, ooh, yuck, you know? I'm like, and then they're like, they're all like sucking back these just straight up sheets of nori. I'm like,
yeah.
You guys were just like gross when I said it in the beginning, you know? Now they're like, I love this stuff. So yeah,
yeah.
That's awesome.
Fun, right?
Yeah.
So,
just super overjoyed to have you, Jonathan, as one of our one of the chefs that works with our students in our Young Cooks program. Mm-hmm. So the Young Cooks program is one of our healthy food programs. So healthy food programs is kind of this big umbrella that encompasses all of our different cooking programs. Young Cooks is probably our most popular one. I mean, we post Young Cooks and they fill up like, within a couple of days. And what Young Cooks, generally speaking, is it's an in-depth opportunity for youth to be cooking. Mm-hmm. And so it's, as you know, it's like usually like six weeks. Yeah. And they do 2.5 hours and they cook and eat together. And so it's healthy twists on, you know, favorites and building their skills and confidence in cooking so that they can cook more at home.
I could rabble off my menu because I got it right beside me here. But like we do, I'll just do the my six classes.
Sure.
I do. So I do like a breakfast class to start off because I keep it simple. So we do some fruit and some pancakes. Next day we do soup and biscuits. So they get to make their own soup and a little slaw. And then we do a day with sushi. Like I teach the kids how to roll sushi and how to cook the rice and, you know, things you can do with it. And and then we do a baking day, of course, and the kids just love that. And then I do a Mexican day because I go back to my roots of working at Atlas. So we do some burritos. And then the last day, I always do ice cream. So we always do some ice cream and pizza. So it's kind of that last day is a fun day, but the kids make everything. And it's great. Like some things we work together, like the first thing we have, because you always got to get food right in them. And then we sort of break down, and so the kids actually made their own pizza doughs and made their own pizza sauce, and amazing to watch these kids can do it.
I was going
to
say, I'm generally aware of what you're doing in that class, but how long of a class is it?
It's 2 hours.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, how are you baking with kids in an hour-long class, but you're not. 2 hours, I can see they're producing some baking. That's great.
Yeah. We're running like madmen at the end of it. It's like, cleanup's a disaster, but you know it's so much fun, right?
It's totally.
It's great. I get a helper in there every so often that can help me police the kids and
that's
give
good.
Them a couple little tips as we go. So that's a great thing. But there's one other great classes.
There are other
too.
Great classes. Yeah. But I will say one thing about Young Cooks, because this is a really exciting partnership. As we ran the first, in partnership with the Comox First Nation, they ran a Young Cooks program that was working with an elder and Indigenous youth and teaching traditional food, like preparation. And so that was a big deal. And we kind of more acted as a fiscal host. Like it was like, this should be happening. Like we want to support this happening. So hired someone from the community with the knowledge to do that. So that's pretty exciting. And we're hoping that that will continue.
Mm-hmm.
But that is within the Young Cooks, but kind of a slightly different variation.
Right. And you're lucky you have a great classrooms. You have several classrooms to work out.
We do. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things to talk about.
I know, honestly. We're going to talk about classes.
We're starting to move into the territory, too, that it speaks to me. Like, as far as what Lush Valley is and what Lush Valley can do and what Lush Valley wants to achieve, all of it is admirable, and I love all of the things that it's doing. But, like, that's the part that speaks to me when you're saying that you want to try to help teach people, you know, how to cook, teach people the basic skills. I'm like, that's where I want to be involved. That's where I can help. And I think that's sort of what I was driving at earlier when I said to the average listener, like really people with various skill sets are also probably required, not necessarily just laborious volunteers. I would assume that other people with skills, knowledge, what have you, would be also beneficial too.
The nice thing about our healthy foods program, the way it's run, to be honest, is that we have this kind of roster of people with different food-based skills.
Mm-hmm.
So I myself am not a good cook. Like, I'm not. But I don't have to do it. I don't teach any of it, right? Like, I just get to meet amazing people that have great skills, like Jonathan or Barb Wade of the Comox First Nation. Or, you know, like, we have all these people that are teaching.
Great instructors. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to do a fermentation class, we partnered with the Immigrant Welcome Center. So we're doing all these different multicultural cooking classes and a lot of those people that are facilitating, maybe newcomers or just like, you know, have a speciality. It's super exciting. And those workshops always fill up fast.
Really quick, yeah.
That's awesome.
But the community kitchens thing, it could kind of be anything. Like it could be bread making. It could be fermentation. It can be, you know, you name it. Whatever people actually want to learn.
Vegetarian classes, canning classes.
Tons of canning and season, different, preservation classes.
And so if people want to take some of these classes, if they want, how do they do so?
It's pretty easy. You just go on our website and through Eventbrite, you basically sign up for the class. We have a model of it's like a pay what you can model.
Right.
I think I just want to really strongly emphasize that everything that we do can be accessed free of charge.
Right.
Everything that we do. But we also look at creative ways to diversify how we bring in funds and how we support the program. So it's a pay what you can model with a suggested donation. Yeah.
See, I love that. Like, you know, there's an opportunity if you can't afford it and you want your child or you want to learn something or provide for your family, learn something, that there is this opportunity for it, you know?
Yeah, that's really our approach.
Yeah, you know, I really love that idea instead of being that, no, you need to be, need money to do this.
One other part of the Healthy Foods program I will just mention is the Dad's Night Out. So once a month.
I love this program. I did this class when I first signed up to do the cooking classes because I'm like, I don't know anything about this. So I'm like, what's the kitchen look like? What do I have to work with? And I walked into this with my daughter and it was amazing. We had such a good time.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's a monthly program for male caregivers and their families to just come together, cook a meal, and eat together. So again, you just go onto our website and sign up. But, you know, these things do fill up fast, so just... Yeah,
I gotta recommend this for people because I mean it probably changes every time. But we basically came in there, and I think it was four or five families, and we kind of all got separated up, and then we were all given a task to do. So like one of us cooked the pasta, one of us made the sauce, one of us made a salad.
Oh yeah,
and then we put everything together, like everyone assembled. Then we all came together in one big group and ate together and had a nice little conversation and got to know each other a little bit, which was, I mean, that's what food's about, is getting to know everyone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, such if you've got that opportunity and you don't know what to do with your kids' dads, great opportunity.
You'll get out there, dads. No, it's great. And I think, you know, we see more and more research coming out that in terms of long-term wellness, you know, social isolation can be the single biggest factor that leads to negative health outcomes. So for us, it's more than just the access to food, right? It is the like celebratory eating together, getting out, socializing, all of those kind of pieces are really, really important to the way that we want to do this work.
Right.
Yeah.
Now there is some other stuff you guys do.
So it's my job is really interesting. It keeps me busy.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah, this past weekend we had a retreat where we looked at, we created a three-year strategic plan last year with the board and staff. So we spent a Saturday basically reflecting on the year that had gone by and seeing where we were at with our strategic plan and where we wanted to go to. So some of the things that people may not know as much about Lush is that we do have a commitment to advocacy work, which means, you know, that's a commitment to be talking with people that are in positions to make decisions and say, hey, we need to think about long-term food security for the Valley. And what does that mean from your perspective? And what changes can we, you know, make? So I personally have to say I was pretty excited about our last municipal election. We seem to have some really great advocates for food security and people that are kind of getting it that are in, you know, municipal leadership positions. So I've been fortunate to make delegations to Courtney and Comox Council and then Cumberland just before the election. And I will also be speaking with the regional district in March. But so this is like a little bit on the down low, but it's sort of starting to come out. So I feel like, do I say this? Don't I? There's a group of us that are looking at this idea of a regional food policy council.
Okay.
So what that would be is it would be, well, we're still defining the terms of reference. So it's really right now sort of in a conversation. But the idea of a food policy council is a body that has some legitimacy in terms of providing advice to, you know, local decision makers, but also has experts that are not, you know, part of local government, for example.
Right.
So a group of sort of food systems experts that can kind of decide, okay, what are our priorities and what should we be thinking about regionally in terms of shifting maybe policy or programs or, you know, all kinds of things. So,
and of one area, we have a lot of experts in that.
We have tons. And there's so much happening.
There's
like,
so many people who, like, there's people I meet and I'm just like, you're a doctor in, you know, this. And
yeah.
I'm like, how do you, like,
yeah.
why are you in the Comox Valley? Like, this seems like such a small place to have this kind of food experts, but
right.
they're here.
Yeah, there's so much expertise here. Yeah. So that's something that may take a while, but just to kind of, I keep saying that I'm dropping the seed. So again, I'm dropping the seed here and saying,
yeah,
like,
right.
let's see if this grows. Let's see how it grows. So it may look different than,
yeah.
than just, you know, it, yeah, it may be under different umbrellas or yeah, we'll see how it evolves in the community. But that's kind of, there's a bit of momentum there. So that's exciting. One other thing that I want to talk about.
Yeah, for sure.
There's an the funding organization called Vancouver Foundation. Obviously, it's part of the community sort of foundations across BC. And Vancouver Foundation is really about getting at root causes of problems and trying to see if there's ways to kind of shift the needle on root causes. So
right.
They've given us a very like a small amount of funding to create an action plan that looks at local food production and people that are in you know in supportive social or sort of transitional housing and thinking about the flows of local food into those housing providers. So what we're doing is trying to create an action plan that would then lead to further support for this idea. So we're having a number of community conversations. So we're inviting local growers to talk about what it would look like for them to kind of provide that kind of food. We're talking to housing providers to see like what are the needs and the gaps in service. We're talking to tenants. We're talking to different people in the community and trying to create this plan. So I have no idea, like I have an idea of what it might end up looking like,
right.
but it's iterative and changing all the time. And people saying, well, don't assume that tenants need this and that, right? Like,
right.
you know, don't assume. So this is about having a conversation about not making assumptions, but thinking, is there a way to work? Because often in the food security world, there can be this seeming disconnect between growing the local economy and food security because local food is more expensive, right?
Mm.
And we know poverty is a root cause of food insecurity.
Right.
So it's constantly trying to think, like, how can we think of creative solutions around that? So...
Wow.
That I wanted to just also mention that's happening.
Those little initiatives that I don't think people realize that what you guys are doing, like I know you've put questionnaires out to the community before about, you know, local farming. And I remember there was one about whether we could raise chickens in Courtney,
mm-hmm.
you know, and,
yeah.
you know, like just getting those questions out to people because, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people don't know what they can and what they can't do, mm-hmm. you know. And
yeah.
if we could sell stuff out of our front yards, would that make... better food security for us. Like if someone was growing carrots in their backyard, could they sell them?
Yeah.
Right.
You know,
and they have
like
a little food
little
stand, fart in the front
stand
yard.
Out in the front yard.
Totally.
Know?
And
yeah.
that work is just so you know, there it's going to be brought up with the city again, because there is some staff that are supposed to be kind of working on those pieces, but it kind of got stalled with the last council. So
as politics go.
Yes, as politics
yeah.
go. Stop and go, stop and go.
Okay, well, I think we've got a good episode here. And
yeah.
I feel like we could sit and do another couple more episodes on each thing we've talked about. Definitely.
Yeah.
I just want to sort of recap a little bit. So we've got like all the fruit picking you guys have done, the cooking classes, all the initiatives you are starting within the community. Really want to know about people want to get involved.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how can people contact you or contact Lush Valley? Or
yeah.
get involved?
Have a new office too, right?
Yeah, so that's sort of on the down low a little bit too. I mean, the office we're not running a lot of programs out of, but it's a workspace because as I, you know, you're talking about all the different kitchens that we work in and we kind of have this decentralized approach,
right?
Which was slightly forced upon us, but it's worked out really well because the Valley is... the geography of the Valley is so spread out.
Well, you used to have your own little headquarters there,
yeah.
but it was a little bit difficult. They still have the beautiful mural beside it.
They do, yeah. But the overhead was really high, and
right.
there was, yeah. So what ended up, you know, it's interesting, because in hindsight, at the time, losing the space was really sad, and I wasn't actually part of the, I was still in Victoria.
Right.
But actually, yeah, anyways, But it has made us rethink how we deliver our services. And so this going to where people are at and delivering services has actually meant that we've been able to reach more people.
Wow.
So it's ended up being a positive in hindsight. You
right.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the moment, it was very heartbreaking to lose this kitchen. But then you created, you got a new community kitchen, or you got several new
several new community kitchens.
Because you're up in Cumberland, you're at Lake Trail.
Yeah, we'll use the Philberg. So Philberg. We run summer camps, young cooks summer camps in the summer as well. And a little bit in Comox, and then the Comox First Nation kitchen has been used as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it also sounds to me that the sort of refining or the relaunching or new focus on the website is also sort of a key point now for you as far as people getting involved and finding you.
Yes, thank you for bringing me back to that. I was like, what was I supposed to be talking about? The website is definitely a great tool for us. And so people, again, in terms of getting involved, if they get on the site and see, because they can fill out a volunteer form and they can say, I want to volunteer for this, and this. And right now we have less programs running. We have more programs obviously running in the, you know, during the growing season. But that's a great way. And you can kind of also sign up for our newsletter. So we do a quarterly newsletter, which lets people know kind of what we've been doing in the community and how else to get involved. But yeah, we're always looking for new members, new volunteers, new donors. And those are some of the great ways to get involved. The other thing is, if you do have feel like you have a specific skill set, you know, that you think that Lush that could run a program, we are always building. You know, we're in a kind of growth phase. We're still a small, very small organization, but we're growing, always growing programs and looking for new ideas. So
yeah,
that's great.
It was funny for myself when I saw the posting for the Young Cooks, and it was just after I left the Atlas, and I was like, well, what am I going to do with myself? And I'm like, I never thought of myself as teaching kids, like never.
Yeah.
Come to us.
Like if someone had told me when I graduated from high school that I'd be doing these Young Cook classes, I would have laughed at them, laughed in their face and said, you're ridiculous. I have no interest in that. And now it's one of the most rewarding things in my life. So it's just amazing that that those opportunities are out there if you're
Fantastic. Definitely
someone who knows what you're doing. So. Well, maybe let's give some emails and that for Lush Valley.
Sure. So yeah, if you want to get in touch with us, it's just www.lushvalley.org is the website. And if you want to contact us, well, you can contact probably the easiest way is through our admin. So it's just admin, admin, at lushvalley.org.
Okay.
Yeah. We also have a Facebook, an Instagram, a Twitter account. So if you just kind of put Lush Valley Food into your Facebook or Instagram or whatever, it's going to pop up.
Pop up there.
Yeah.
Perfect.
For sure. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for coming in and talking.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
It's fun.
And I know we'll have you back because I feel like I just want to have a whole conversation about food systems.
I know. I think there's a couple things there that we just scratched the surface that we should probably get more in depth.
Literally like just like.
Oh, yeah. I'll nerd out on that stuff anytime you want.
All right.
That sounds great. Anyway, so thank you for staying and listening. But
thank you. I think that wraps up everything that we wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, definitely. If anyone's out there and wants to do a podcast and has a food thing they'd like to talk to us about, we're always interested in finding new guests and maybe give us a little initiative to get out there and actually do some podcasts.
I know. It's funny. Ever since we went mobile, we've sort of not gone mobile.
I know. We kind of come back to the ice cream shop every time. So. But it's okay. I don't mind doing it. It's a nice start to my day to have a good conversation with someone, especially about food. So I've got that energy to get through the day. And
for sure. Well, thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.
Yes. And once again, remember, keep it fresh, keep it flavorful, and keep it fun. Thanks for listening to the Edible Valley Podcast.